introverted noise.
Hurry up, Daddy.
Let's do it.
Out to the right. 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it
this.
To Mo Williams. Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. Back with the full crew. Took a little bit of time, let things marinate, and we are here ready to give our takes for not just the last game, but the season overall. But before we get to all that, you know, it's Saxy Prince's birthday. So we're going to start things off. We can go in reverse order. Happy birthday, Prince. What's going on with you, man? How you doing? How you been?
Yeah, man. Another year, older, wiser, hopefully. You know, it's been an exciting couple of days. A couple of weeks ago, I found out at work they had they planned, you know, a special retreat just for my birthday. You know, they're calling it, you know, some kind of corporate event or whatever the case is. But I know it was really because they had foreseen my birthday was coming up. So, you know, they do a little shindig, had some corporate events and whatnot. And went out to Maple Grove, did some whirly ball. Never done whirly ball ever before. But
what is whirly ball?
It is like, it's like lacrosse, but you're in bumper cars. So it's pretty intense. Think lacrosse, but in bumper cars.
JR, y'all play whirly ball in North Carolina?
My first time hearing the whirly ball was just 3 seconds ago.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, continue, Saxy Prince. Continue.
Yeah, no, it's been a good birthday. You know, I appreciate y'all and everyone else on Twitter, Facebook, and, you know, my contacts, you know, shouting me out for birthday and whatnot. Yeah, it's been a good birthday so far. I get to celebrate a little bit more this weekend, doing another escape riddle room. It'll be fantastic. Game of Thrones themed, y'all. So I'm doing this for my people right now. So
you should have brought JR in for this one. He'd be a secret weapon.
Right, he's watched them
more recently than anybody else.
Right, JR's all caught up, so he probably has everything fresh in his mind. You know how JR is; he watches tape really intensely, so you know he has caught all the little inner things that we probably missed, you know, a couple of years ago when we missed it.
He's ready. So I guess one last question, because I'm gonna go to Miles now. Miles, I need a question to wake you up here. We got you up, you know, past your bedtime and stuff. But
yeah, I'm tired.
Speed skating. You know, you versus Saxy Prince, who wins? Long track.
It doesn't matter the distance. I'll beat Prince. And
oh yeah, Miles is winning that hands down. I'm admitting
I'll go backwards. He can go forwards.
Ooh. Win. So okay, yeah, we might have like a Saxy Prince Miles triathlon. Right now, we got basketball 1-on-1. We got a skating event with Miles going backwards. We just need one more sport, and we're gonna have to get this thing going.
Well, we can't do swimming because we both going to drown. So we got to do something that's on land or maybe in the sky. Gymnastics, Miles.
I don't do heights.
Light-skinned right. People.
Yeah.
Jared says that like he does heights. Come on, man.
I do.
Oh, man.
So you don't like birds. Flying?
Huh?
You don't like flying?
I'm fine in a plane. I don't like being... Like on a skyscraper up in tall buildings looking down? Nah.
So you don't like roller coasters?
Nope.
Oh my God.
Come on, man. Y'all.
Man.
I ride roller coasters. I mean, I like roller coasters.
But you don't like them. Okay.
All right. He turns red on roller coasters.
Nah, my issue more of roller coasters is I get motion sick. That's my problem more than the heights.
Light skinned people.
All right. Well, JR, my man, how you doing? How you been? And I guess it's a bit sad for most of us, but for you, it's sad, but you got draft season. So, you know, how you doing? How are things going with that? You jumped all the way in at this point?
Yeah, man. You know, January 1st really is what kicks off draft season because a lot of teams, their seasons come to an end and it's officially over for a lot of teams and they start looking at draft prospects and that's what I'm here for. So I'm excited.
All right, well, let's jump right into this thing. And obviously, it's been a couple of weeks. We took some time off there after that brutal end. Which, you know, it's Yinka's birthday, so you know, in the spirit of being, you know, giving and charitable and all those things, I guess we can give Yinka some of his props because, you know, well before the season was over, when the math and the probabilities and all those things were still saying that the Vikings should make the playoffs, Yinka, privately, maybe not so sure about those things. And I guess the season kind of ended in the way that, you know, Yinka privately again said it was going to end. So again, you know, it's your birthday, Prince. I'm going to let you kick this thing off. Bears game. What are your thoughts on the team performance overall? Obviously, the quarterback performance and anything else you want to get off your chest related to the last game of the season.
Yeah, so the reason there's a reason why I did it privately and not on the timeline, because y'all would know how people would have reacted had I done it on the timeline. I would not have made it to this birthday had I announced it publicly. Anyways, I honestly thought the Vikings were going to win this game. You know, I thought that the Bears were not going to give their full effort. You know, I thought they were going to, you know, maybe give an effort in the beginning, but, you know, obviously once they saw, you know, maybe this game isn't really worth it, we'll still have, for the most part, home field advantage. You know, let's just go and try to play as clean of a game as possible and then get out of there without, you know, any major injuries or anything like that. But the Vikings showed that, you know, when it comes down to beating a good team, even a good team that's probably not going to play, you know, 100% against you, they have kind of shown quite a few times this past season that they just weren't up to the challenge. They were an average team, and, you know, we're okay with admitting that they were an average team. Now, that doesn't mean that they can't grow from being an average team, especially with all the talent they have. But it's too hard for me to blame one individual for why this was. You know, you can't blame Kirk Cousins. You can't blame just blame Zimmer. You can't blame, you know, Stefanski, offensive weapons, defensive performances and stuff. Because I think at certain times there was times where we were looking really, really good. And then times there, you know, obviously the game just got out of hand. So I think this game actually kind of encapsulated what the entire season was. I mean, I think you saw the beginning of the game where the Vikings didn't look ready, towards the middle where it's like, oh, well, it looks like we have a little more of the game. And then towards the end, you can kind of tell they just weren't ready for this game. So I think this game was very, very symbolic, in my opinion, for how the Vikings season went.
Miles, what's your perspective? Because generally speaking, you are, I guess we'll say, a bit more optimistic about these things, or maybe a bit more accepting of the reality of these things would be a better way of putting it. But I guess after seeing, the way the Vikings played in the final game of the season and kind of looking back at things overall, I guess, what are your thoughts on the game? And then, how do you put this season overall in perspective?
I mean, to put it frank, but I mean, the end of the season, the way they played every single big game this season, they came up short. They didn't show up for the most part. Key situations and key opportunities to make a statement, to score some points, to, you know, to do things that obviously are needed to win games in big games that we've seen this season, they came up short again. Like we saw it throughout the entire season. You saw it against the New Orleans Saints. You saw it against the Seattle Seahawks, the New England Patriots, the Chicago Bears twice. There's probably another game in there that I'm missing. Like a lot of the big games that they played this season, they had opportunities that against every single team that they lost to this year, specifically I'll say the games that were, whether you call them prime time or games that were against better competition, against teams that are, you know, in the playoffs, that are, you know, in the divisional round of the playoffs or what have you, is they came up short. But every single one of those games, they had an opportunity to make a statement, to make, you know, make a play here, to not make a mistake here, and they didn't do it. Whether it's your quarterback making key turnovers, whether it's your defense, you know, with penalties or, you know, just giving up randomly big plays, random plays that are like as unprecedented from this team. It just felt like the way they handled the season just was beside all expectations. I just don't think they played they didn't play very many games this season cohesively. Like there's maybe one or two games the entire season where you're like, wow, they really put things all together. But those games were against lesser competition where you expected that to happen, but you didn't see that happen against teams. The only game I'd say that to me the best game of the season might have been the Philadelphia Eagle game, and they still almost gave that one away. So it's just a disappointing season just because you know the expectations, you know the talent on the roster, and you see the moves that were made to make yourself better after a 13-3 season, NFC Championship. You know, all those things that we talk about, and they ended up firing their offensive coordinator that, you know, it's just extremely disappointing. Not really at the end of the day during the Bears game, looking back at specifically that last game, nothing really surprised me at that point.
Yeah. And obviously I know you played the position, and I'm curious, like, what do you make of there's a couple exchanges. So like the one that obviously got the most press was, you know, Thielen and Kirk going at each other, Thielen yelling, Kirk saying, you know, I don't have, you know, 10 seconds, whatever it was. And you know, they went back and forth for a little bit. But then another, I guess, exchange, it seemed kind of in that same timeline where Kirk was sitting on, you know, on the bench, and, you know, Diggs kind of comes over and is trying to like hype him up or whatever. It says like, I got you. Yeah, I guess from your perspective, like, what do you make of all of that and those interactions with, you know, and on one hand, you know, a wide receiver kind of going at the quarterback like that, and on the other hand, another wide receiver kind of coming in and trying to pump up the quarterback. I guess when those things have happened when you play, like, what are the thoughts around the team when something like that is going down?
I mean, it literally was a culmination of all the frustration that you saw the back half of the season for the offense happening in that basically one scene between Adam Thielen and Kirk Cousins. Like, should you be having miscommunication with your quarterback and receiver week 17? Not that miscommunication doesn't happen, but should you be having key miscommunication aspects of your receiver or your quarterback not understanding, you know, how each other wants to play by week 17? That's like, it's just inexcusable at that point. Like, the quarterback should know, and the receiver should know. They should be on the same page at that point on how things should be running. You could definitely tell the back half of the season, Adam Thielen's frustration. You know, he double teamed a lot, but at the same time, there are times where he's open and Kirk either missed him or didn't, or wasn't willing to pull the trigger or what have you. It was just literally the epitome of that frustration. And for me, my issue wasn't the argument itself. It was more of the reasoning behind the argument. Like, I, you know, guys are going to argue, guys are going to have miscommunication, guys are going to have those situations where they, you know, there's that, those frustrating situations. But at the end of the day, it just really felt like that's how the entire season went and felt like was their argument, because you're like, it's week 17 and you could just tell everything was boiling up and it finally came out, in that last game. But then you have, you know, you have one guy, and both guys want to win. All three, Adam Thielen, Kirk Cousins, Stephon Diggs, they all want to win. That's obvious. But you could tell your two wide receivers are the guys that are, you know, supposedly, or they're supposed to be your guys that are leading your offense in a way, because they're, you know, your best two offensive players. And then when things aren't going well and your quarterback isn't willing to do certain things to help make more plays, and you could tell, and that's just their style of personalities. You know, those guys both want the ball, but at the same time, they're not afraid to let their quarterback know that, you know, to get them the ball. And I guess that's where I had a standpoint from it, was I didn't think the argument was a big deal. I just thought, it didn't make sense to have that kind of miscommunication this late in the season, and to not know, like, that the timing aspect. You know, if this was earlier in the season, I could totally understand this, but for it to be week 17, it just tells you kind of everything you need to know for the season.
All right, and last but certainly not least, you know, before we went into all this, JR, you came out pretty definitively and said that, you know, if the Vikings didn't win this game, didn't make the playoffs, that, you know, season was an outright failure, I guess, after, you know, that game, how everything went down. What are your thoughts first on the game and then the season overall?
I thought it was embarrassing. And why do I say embarrassing? With as much to play for on the line as this team did, everything was set up for you to win. The Bears didn't have any motivation for this game because they had already clinched a playoff spot. And, yes, they were playing for the 2 seed, but they had already clinched a spot in the playoffs. And in the back of your mind, you're always thinking that when you're out there. And I know you want to get the 2 seed or whatever that was that they could get from the Rams at the time. But they didn't really have much motivation outside of that besides setting a statement to the entire NFL and announcing their presence in the NFC North. And that's exactly what they did. They just imposed their will throughout the game, and they just bullied this entire team in every single phase. And it was just embarrassing to watch, in my opinion. The Thielen and Kirk Cousins thing, I mean, it's just two competitors in the heat of battle. And that happens often. But you can tell that a lot of emotions were spilling over in that entire ordeal because nobody was just on the same page in that game. And that's just exactly how it looked. And the Bears just utterly dominated the Vikings. And it was just embarrassing to watch, man.
And so from your perspective, obviously, you know, we go to you for kind of the, you know, the deeper dive QB analysis. And, you know, the Vikings have tweeted things out recently. And, you know, I guess supporters will say of Kirk Cousins will come out and say things like, you know, first quarterback in NFL history with 4,000 yards and, you know, completion percentage of this and all of those things. But then you go look at, you know, I guess the more advanced statistics on, and move away from some of the volume stats. And, you know, Kirk Cousins had a fairly middle-of-the-road statistical season. I guess, JR, from your perspective, when you're evaluating him from a tape perspective, what did you see and kind of what tier of quarterback would you put Kirk Cousins in after this first season with the Vikings?
It was very inconsistent, and it was a wild ride, and that's been the report about Kirk Cousins' his entire career. And he's been – his entire tenure in the NFL has been a roller coaster ride, and I say that because – that's exactly how his first year went with the Vikings. There was some extreme highs and there was some extreme lows. And that's just what you're going to get with him. You don't know what you're going to get with him weekly. And that's something that I've always had an issue with him. And the biggest issue that I have with Kirk Cousins is he does not rise to the occasion. And that's something that I talked about prior to signing or prior to the Vikings did sign him or when they signed him. He just does not rise to the occasion. And I think he just tried to play too perfect in games, and it results in him being very uptight. So when he's out there playing, that those little demons are always in the back of his head that are telling him not to mess up because he wants to win the big game so bad that he plays uptight and he feels like he can't make a mistake. So he plays that way as well. That's why you're seeing him throw short of the sticks often, and you're not seeing him take as many risks as he does or as he did early on in the season because he just is not – he just doesn't want to take those big steps down the field or whatever he has to do in order to make those plays or those risky plays because he doesn't want to mess up. And that's how exactly how he played against the Bears. Now, he didn't have a chance behind that offensive line. They didn't play well in that game, that Week 17 game. And it's not all his fault. But when he had opportunities to make plays, it was just hit or miss with him. And that's exactly how his entire first year went with the Vikings. But I think he's still a top 15 quarterback in the league. I would probably put him in that 12 to 15 range, which is fine. I think you can win a Super Bowl with that type of guy. But we all know everything has to be perfect for Kirk Cousins around him. And that's what they knew when they did end up signing him. So they have to find a way to fix his offensive line, get the run game going, because they already have two dominant perimeter weapons. And I still think they need to get a third guy somehow, because they tried to use Dalvin Cook in spots, but he's just not that versatile running back like a James White or somebody like that. That's just not what caters to his skill set. He's a between the tackles and he can run on the perimeter as well. But as far as running routes and being efficient and being a huge mismatch against linebackers, he's just not that guy. And then Kyle Rudolph, everyone knows we went back and forth about this guy. He's just not that diverse weapon that they do need, but he is a reliable underneath the covers type of guy that can be a second tight end. They just need that field stretcher guy that can go deep against linebackers or even slot corners and be that versatile weapon.
And so I guess question, JR, for you first. Miles, you can jump in next there. Like the I guess the issues that you're describing with Kirk Cousins in terms of you know, like they're largely in his head. You know, he has the physical abilities, he can make the throws. And I think that's the thing that, you know, his supporters really will often kind of point to. Same thing that we'd see with Sam Bradford is that, yeah, he can make a lot of amazing throws and throws that stand out in your mind and throws that are like, wow, if we could just do this, this and this around him with his ability to do these things, then maybe he really is the guy that's going to lead us to the promised land. But what you're describing to me is a guy who has some issues, you know, upstairs. Can you think of, you know, many or any examples of a quarterback who did have those sorts of demons or issues or whatever you might want to call it, who was able to, I guess, consistently overcome them to rise to those occasions on a regular basis, you know, when they had these issues for this much of their career kind of starting out?
Well, Peyton Manning had it early on in his career, and he had some trial and error early on in his playoff career. He's probably the best example, and I'm obviously not saying Kirk Cousins is Peyton Manning, just using it as a mental standpoint. And until he wins that big game, those demons and that hurdle is still going to be there until he wins that big game. So we'll see what happens, and maybe once he wins that big game, whether it's a win and end game or even a playoff game, if he does break down that barrier and he starts to play much better in big games.
All right, so basically you just feel like it doesn't matter, like if he plays one of the games where he has, like, you know, week 17 type stat line, but the team wins, that monkey's off his back, and he'll be able to play more loose in those games going forward, you think?
Yeah, just because there won't be any pressure. And I think the whole $84 million thing, no matter what he says, that is always in his head. And I know he says he has the license to lead. We've all made fun of him about that, and that he's the $84 million man. When he's out there on that field, there's no doubt in my mind that's in the back of his head, and he wants to prove that he's worth that to this team. And that's, he just looked like he was pressing too much trying to prove that. He just needs to relax and just go out there and play ball, because everyone knows he has the ability to do it. He just has to be consistent in these big games. And until he wins these big games, the reputation of he doesn't show up when the pressure is the highest is going to follow him.
And Miles, I guess from your perspective, similar thoughts for you. I guess a quarterback who has, you know, issues, I guess it's a confidence thing. I mean, you know, we're using a lot of different words to kind of talk around it, but for you in a locker room, how does that affect, I guess, the other guys? Because one of the things we talked about a lot, you know, over the course of the season is, you know, and it's something the team talked about where maybe they're dancing around a little bit as well, where, you know, what's our identity on offense, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, I guess if the quarterback is lacking confidence or struggling to believe in himself going into big game situations, how does that affect the other players on the offense?
Oh, it's definitely an issue, I'm sure, within the locker room. I mean, you're going to have guys, you know, who are performing well on both sides of the ball who are going to question the whole thing, because you know, everything they're hearing, everything they're being told, you know, I know a lot of people say they don't follow the noise and on social media and whatnot, but you know, a lot of these guys do. It's out there. It's hard not to follow. They're always just told they know how talented their team is. Being told that we're just a quarterback away, we brought in this guy and paid him this kind of money because we believe he's a better quarterback than what we had previously. And, you know, just because that guy won you some big games doesn't mean, you know, he's the right guy for us or that we couldn't improve. And so they're basically being told this, sold this bill of goods on why this guy's getting paid the way he is. And that adding him to their roster was, you know, basically should have been a foregone conclusion that this team would be playing this weekend, you know, late in January and whatnot. And to fall short of that, I'm sure, and to watch your team and watch your quarterback, you know, struggle in those big games when that's what he was expected to be, that's what he was brought in for. It definitely has to be disheartening for these guys. I mean, they know he's here for the short to long term. 3 years, we know in the NFL can be considered a long time. So he's here. So they know that he's their guy. But yeah, it would be a problem for me just because, you know, you're expecting your key player, like your quarterback, to lead you and to be that guy to set that example for you. But when he's setting an example for you of kind of running scared and being afraid of, you know, throwing the ball and taking some chances, that definitely doesn't give you a vote of confidence moving forward either. So I think there's going to be a lot of that. He's going to continue to prove himself for this team to kind of get behind him. And it doesn't start, it'll have to start this offseason, you know, however he handles that situation with his wide receivers and stuff like that. But it's going to be tough. I do think it's going to be tough for him to kind of earn that back, because, you know, he had it going into the season. Let's see how he handles it going into year two.
Yeah, because it's, you know, a lot of that license to lead talk, like we joked around a lot about early in the season, that stuff seemed to quiet down a little bit as the season went along. And
well, and the problem is he doesn't need to be somebody he's not. Like, don't be somebody that you're not. Be the person that got you to the point of where you're at in your career, and trying to change that, I don't know, just puts more pressure on yourself. And to JR's point, you know, we know the money is there in the back of his head, whether he'll say it or not. And we know those high expectations are there. So if you're not going to allow yourself to be who you are within those expectations, you're going to see the outcome that we saw this year.
All right. Well, rapid fire, Miles, what grade would you give this season?
C minus. I mean,
okay. JR, how about you?
Definitely C.
Okay. All right. It is a C. All right. Well, let's move this thing along. Obviously, the Viking season is not – well, okay, let me not say that, because if I say that, Eric will yell at me. The Viking season was not what I think the majority of the fan base expected. It probably came in a little bit closer to what those who I guess we'll say sharp money in Vegas, people who would be gambling on the season or gambling on over-unders, I think we came closer to what they would have predicted than – what much of the fan base would have predicted coming off that 13-3. But moving away from that, you know, a lot of the talk is obviously offensive line. That's the thing. I know we've talked a lot, and you know, our good friend Matt Collar also has put out a great piece, which I'll link to in the show notes, highlighting the need for us to get us some additional weapons. But most people don't want to hear that. All they want to hear is offensive line, offensive line, offensive line is what we need to address. And obviously the offensive line needs to get better. So JR, I know that you've made a couple different points around this, that in some cases people have kind of, I guess, picked up or understood what you were saying. In other cases, people kind of jumped on you a little bit when you were talking about rebuilding an offensive line being, you know, a process that isn't really an overnight thing. You know, I guess help me understand what it was or what the point you were trying to make there was, because everyone now looks at these Indianapolis Colts and their offensive line was bad last year and it's good now. So, yeah.
Yeah, and all I was trying to say with that is everyone expects a strong turnover in the offensive line from year to year, and that's just not possible, because of all the positions on the field, offensive line is that group that needs continuity, and they have to figure out a way to play together over a long extended period of time, because they usually get better as time goes on. We saw it with old Dallas Cowboys, with Tyron Smith, with Zach Martin, Travis Frederick, when they were once the most dominating line in the NFL. They were playing games together year after year, and they were just establishing that continuity, because there's nothing like knowing the person beside you is going to be there game after game. And it's just like having a brother or a sister. You know exactly what they're going to do before sometimes they even do it. And the communication is just top notch when you're beside a person forever. So that's what I was saying with that. And just everyone likes to point to the Colts because they think they had like a league leading 56 sacks a year ago, and now they're a league low 18 sacks this year. And they've been putting resources in that offensive line forever. I know Anthony Costanzo, he was a first round pick from 2011. Ryan Kelly, their center, he was their 2016 first round pick. And of course, Quentin Nelson this year and Braden Smith were first and second round picks, respectively, this year as well. And they lucked up into Matt Glowinski this year when he got cut from the Seahawks. So they've been pouring resources in that offensive line for, what, 8 years now, 6 or 7 years, something in that range. So it's not going to happen overnight, establishing a dominant or even a marginal offensive line. And they have a good start. The Vikings have a good start. They have Riley Reiff, who I think can be a serviceable left tackle. They got Brian O'Neill, who was a fantastic pick in the second round, who's going to be really good. Pat Elflein, I just think he was hurt this year, and missing training camp was huge for him, and it showed in his play. He just was not strong, and he didn't make that leap like we thought he was going to make in his second year. But I expect him to be better next year as long as he does stay healthy and he continues to strengthen that shoulder. But they have to find a way to get two guards. They have to find a way to upgrade both of their guard spots, because that is probably the most weak link
on their offensive line, especially left guard. Now we can bait back and forth which one is more important, and I don't have a belief that one is more important over the other, besides right guard being in the immediate quarterback sight line, depending on if he's a right-hand quarterback. So I think both guard spots is somewhere – or guard – guards, period, or you can find them anywhere in the draft, in my opinion. There's no target range, and I know you did some work on that, Jason, finding out where teams usually take or draft guards and how their success translates into the NFL, and there's no proven theory to it, but day two is usually where most teams find those serviceable guards, and I think that's something that they would look to do in this draft.
Yeah, and Miles, obviously, you've done a bit of work on the subject. So I guess from your perspective, offensive line, what needs to be done? What does the team need to do to make this situation better than it currently is?
Yeah, I mean, I think don't play a tackle at guard. I mean, we saw Mike Remmers slide in with no previous experience outside of the three games last year at guard, like in his career. I know he's come out and said that that's not his natural position. So asking a guy who's not built to go against defensive tackles and nose tackles on a down and down basis just wasn't fair to Remmers. I guess that's where I say that's the biggest hole, just because the Vikings could at least bring someone like Tom Compton back, and they know that they have someone that can play at an average level, like below to average to slightly below average level. But in right guard, we don't have an option there right now at all. Danny Isadora is a guy that I know we like to come out of college, but we haven't seen much out of him the 2 years he's been here. I mean, he's played in spurts and done okay, but I just don't know if he's the guy, and there's no way I believe you could go into next season relying on that. So like JR said, it's finding two guards. I think you might need to get creative with it. We know that they're cap strung a little bit, but there are some names on the free agent market that are available that could help be an upgrade to what they currently had in 2018, and it could make a significant difference. Just guys that naturally play the guard positions, I think would just be a major increase to what we saw this last year. So I noted in my articles, I think if you wanted to look for trades, they kind of need to get a little creative, besides being able to open up some cap room to make moves. There are some guys that out there that might be available in trades, you know, whether they're a little older and with some expiring contracts, or guys that, you know, have younger guys ready to take over. So I think there's some opportunities for this team to add at one or two guards in free agency and look to the draft and grab at least one more. So we'll see what they do, but I think we know it should be one of the top priorities, especially on the offensive side of the ball.
And I know we talked about the players there. I guess what are your thoughts? Because obviously the news right now is a couple of the Packers coaches are being looked at by the Vikings for potentially coming in to be our answer at an offensive line coach. I guess what are your thoughts on some of the names beyond those that we should be looking at to come in and potentially coach the offensive line for this upcoming season?
Yeah, I think the surprise one, not really surprise, but a guy that you look at that was someone that I didn't really have in my radar was Joe Philbin, the Packers interim head coach this last season. He's got a lot of head coaching experience and O-line experience. He's the kind of guy that could really fit to what we want, what this offense wants to do. But a couple other names I'd keyed on was, the other Packers offensive line coach that you pointed out, Jason, James Campen. Sounds like he might be interested coming here or trying to interview here or leave Green Bay. Bill Callahan from Washington was the big name on my list. He's the guy that, I believe is one of the top O-line coaches in the league. Everything we've heard, sounds like Washington might be, sounds like guys might be wanting to leave and kind of leave town there. So he could be a guy that's available. Cincinnati Bengals, Frank Pollock, another guy that, we could see jump ship and look for a new opportunity. And then the last one I had noted was, the Jets, Rick Dennison. Not sure of his contract situation. Not sure what the Jets are going to do along their coaching staff. But I know with the new head coach, Adam Gase, there might be opportunity for him to leave. So those are a few names that I looked at.
All right. And if you have not already checked out Miles' articles, make sure you do so. The link will be in the show notes. All right. Last topic to get to before we get up out of here. Offensive coordinator. In the end, it is the name that Miles predicted it would be, but it seemed to take a little bit longer than we thought. And there didn't seem to be as much interest maybe around the league as, you know, last offseason. Obviously, we were the hot team coming off to 13-3, new quarterback, all that stuff. JR, I'll start with you on this one here. I guess, what were your thoughts? And I guess, how confident were you in things as the, you know, Vikings offensive coordinator search seemed to drag out a little bit? And then what are your thoughts and expectations for Stefanski coming in, with us knowing really so little about, you know, kind of who he is and what he's going to be as an offensive play caller?
Yeah, I was fine with them promoting Kevin Stefanski. And why do I say that? I actually liked what he did during the backstretch of the year. And I know they struggled against the Bears. And I thought he called a really good game against the Dolphins. And we saw a lot of Pat Shurmur implementations that he tried to put into the offense in such, in such a short period of time. Couldn't get that out. But I think with an entire offseason and now a full season next year, I think he's going to be able to put in some schemes that he really wants to run just because he has the time to install the stuff and the plays with the guys. So I'm expecting not necessarily a big jump, but I think there's going to be some improvements, especially in the explosive plays area, because that's something that the Vikings really lacked this year. They were more of a nickel and dime type of offense, and that offense is really predicated on you not turning the ball over and having a dominant run game. We really saw that with North Turner in 2015. And that's just an identity that they tried to have this year, and it just didn't work for them because their offense doesn't really set up for that type of running style or that type of style in general, because their offensive line isn't that heavy mauler type of running game that we saw in years past where they had success. So I expect them to be much more up-tempo as well. And that's something that Pat Shurmur excelled at when he was here as well. So I think Stefanski not necessarily going to make a big jump, but I think we're going to see some improvements in the offense, especially the explosiveness and in the running game.
Okay. And Miles, I mean, you've been calling this for a while, not necessarily as a prediction, but more as what you would want to see. Just really highlighting the importance of continuity, especially with Kirk Cousins going into year two, not want to throw away another season with a brand new OC. What are your thoughts on, I guess, your hope or your kind of prediction coming through? And what sort of concepts are you, I guess, hoping that you'll see from Kevin Stefanski as we move into his first full season as the offensive coordinator?
Yeah, I think to touch on your point on continuity, we heard that from a lot of the players after their reaction, after they had a post-reaction of the Stefanski news of him being named the full-time OC heading into 2019, is they like knowing going into the season what kind of the expectations for them is going to be, what kind of game and what kind of plays they can expect to run and the things they can prepare for heading into the new season. That's important. When you know exactly what is expected and what's going to happen, it allows you to kind of be a little more free as you play, because you know it more. You're going to know it a lot easier. You're going to know it like more like the back of your hand. And when you're learning a new offense, it takes a little longer. Depending on the concepts, depending on the terminology and whatnot, it can take you and kind of take things a little longer to kind of get caught up. So knowing that right away now is super helpful, so that when they meet and they can tell the players as all the players, you know, head off to do their own things and whatnot in the offseason, they know exactly what they need to prepare for. But I think with Stefanski, I think what you're going to see is you're going to see a lot more of figuring Kirk Cousins' strengths and working around and working into those. I think you're going to see a lot less QB from the shotgun. I think the shotgun was something that, yes, Kirk Cousins can do it, but is that Kirk Cousins' strength? No. But I mean, yeah, we know that you need to do it at times, but I just don't think that's something he thrives in, sitting back and being And working from the shotgun is not something I think is his best skill set. I think he likes to work under center. He's able to get into more of a rhythm once he takes his drop. And there's a lot more things I feel like they believe they can do from under the center than what's asked of in the shotgun as well. And I'm sure JR could touch on that as well. But I think we're going to see a lot more movement in space. You're going to see more of a cohesive run game in terms of the plan. And to your guys' point, what Pat Shurmur did in 2017, I think you're going to see a little bit more of those style of runs that we saw like against the Miami Dolphins and the Detroit Lions. You're going to see a lot more of the using your best players, whether offensive line, wide receiver, running back, you're going to use them in their best possible way. I believe Kevin Stefanski is that type of player, or that type of coach, excuse me, who wants to build around his best players and do what they're best at, not just forcing them to do what he wants them to do, but putting them into situations to be successful. Pat Elflein out in space, Brian O'Neill out in space, letting those guys use their athleticism because that's what their skill sets are, not forcing a guy like Pat Elflein one-on-one against a guy like Akeem Hicks in the middle in the run game. That's not fair to him. That's not his skill set. That's not what it's not what he's best at. So, moving guys like Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs around the formations. And earlier, I know JR mentioned Dalvin Cook, moving him around a little bit and letting him be that that playmaker that we know he can be. And then I believe that he's going to push hard this offseason to add a couple more weapons to add to that arsenal so that they can kind of help free guys up like Adam Thielen, Stephon Diggs, so that they're not getting double teamed every play like we saw down the stretch.
All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen. We covered quite a bit. We covered all the things we wanted to, and I think that's it. I mean, there's nothing else really to be said. It was a disappointing season. Not what anyone was hoping for. No need to pile on. I think that there's a long off season, and most of us have turned to what can be done to make this team better as things progress. Obviously, it's draft season. Both of y'all have been doing work already, and so that's it. That's all. We will be back soon. Saxy Prince had to dip out of here. It's his birthday. He has some things to do. But JR Miles, as always, thanks for coming through. Listeners, thanks for sticking with us. And we will talk to you guys soon. Have a good one.